BBC News, hello, I'm Eileen McHugh. The first public prayer for Pope Francis, who died early on Monday morning, will be said in St. Peter's Square in Rome this evening. Large groups have started to gather for the rosary, which will be recited by a senior Vatican cardinal. Rupert Wingfield-Hayes is at the square.
Many people here saw the Pope just yesterday. I did myself. He came out here into the St. Peter's Square to greet people after the Easter Mass here. And people were really excited and joyful to see him because he had been so very, very sick. Just a month ago, he had been in hospital. He was reportedly close to death at that stage. He had double pneumonia, very, very seriously ill, but then he came out of hospital. He seemed to be making a recovery, but you know, having seen him yesterday, he looked incredibly frail. His voice was very, very weak. It's clear he had not recovered, but he insisted on coming out and taking part in the Easter service.
The body of the Pope could be moved to St. Peter's Basilica to lie in state as early as Wednesday. The funeral will take place within a week. Pope Francis, who was 88, was the first Latin American pope. Argentina's president, Javier Milei, has decreed 7 days of national mourning. The Archbishop of Buenos Aires told his congregation the pope had insisted on building bridges and the best tribute Argentines could pay him was to unite. Will Grant reports.
Latin America is home to some 40% of the world's Catholics, and most of them took great pride in having one of their own as head of the Catholic Church. Papa Francisco, as he was known in Spanish, was beloved by ordinary Latin Americans for his messages of solidarity with the region's poor and most vulnerable. In his native Argentina, President Javier Milei, a man with whom the Pope had serious ideological differences, has called 7 days of national mourning. Pope Francis will also be remembered fondly in nations with much smaller Catholic populations, particularly Cuba, where he played a crucial role in brokering a rapprochement between the US and the Cuban government in 2014.
The Christian community in the Middle East is mourning Pope Francis, especially Palestinian Christians who felt he often spoke up for them. In his final Easter Sunday message, Pope Francis once again addressed the war in Gaza and the suffering of both Palestinians and Israelis. The UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, added his voice to those mourning the death of Pope Francis.
Pope Francis was a messenger of hope, humility and humanity. He was a transcendent voice for peace, human dignity and social justice. He leaves behind a legacy of faith, service and compassion for all, especially those on the margins of life or trapped by the horrors of conflict.
You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. Medics in Sudan say the number of people killed in the western region of Darfur has risen to more than 600 in less than 10 days, the largest mass killing of unarmed civilians since the start of the war. In the latest attack on Sunday, the Sudan Doctors Network says more than 20 people were killed and dozens were injured by the paramilitary RSF in the besieged city of El Fasher. The White House says President Trump stands strongly behind his defence secretary, Pete Hegseth, after reports emerged that he shared sensitive military information on a second chat group that included his wife, brother and personal lawyer. It related to the same attack on Houthi rebels in Yemen, the details of which were inadvertently leaked to the editor of The Atlantic magazine, causing a furore. Accosted by journalists on Monday morning, Mr. Hegseth lashed out at what he called hoaxers in the media.
This group right here, full of hoaxers that peddle anonymous sources from leakers with axes to grind, and then you put it all together as if it's some news story. And when we know it, you know exactly what it is. So I'm really proud of what we're doing for the president, fighting hard across the board.
President Putin has said Ukrainian proposals to have a 30-day ceasefire to prevent strikes on civilian infrastructure needed to be carefully assessed. He was speaking after the expiry of a brief period of what he'd announced as an Easter truce. That saw a temporary pause in long-distance airstrikes, but both sides accused each other of continued hostilities at the front. Officials in Tunisia have arrested a prominent lawyer and fierce critic of the country's president. Ahmed Sawab's arrest comes days after a court handed down long jail terms to a group of senior politicians, businessmen and lawyers on charges of conspiring against state security. BBC News.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for 2 open participating member seats and 1 open listener sponsor seat to serve 3-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2028. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 29th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 29th. More information and board applications are available at wardfm.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never.
Welcome to A Public Affair. I'm your Monday host, Douglas Haynes. In the midst of the Trump administration sticking its head in the sand about the climate crisis, on today's Earth Week edition of A Public Affair, we're featuring a local artistic wake-up call about the climate emergency. Madison artist Tetra Pac-Man is with me in the studio to talk about his recent role as artist in residence at the Madison Public Library and his current installation, Wake Up, and collaborative exhibit Doing Something on display at the Central Library through this week. Tetra Pac-Man was one of the Madison Public Library's first artists in residence in 2013. He's been back over the past 9 months or so. His practice is focused on community-generated social sculpture projects. His work is about the future and the challenges we face today as a community, and he explores the role of art as a mechanism to generate awareness about the climate crisis. And that's in particular what we're going to talk about today with this really thought-provoking new work that he has generated and generated with community members at the Madison Public Library. Tetra Pac-Man, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad to have your voice here in the studio with us during Earth Week. Thanks for coming in.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here too. And hello, everybody over there.
Yeah, I want to welcome all of you listening as well. We'd love for you to join our conversation today. If you have a question for my guest, Tetra Pac-Man, or want to share a comment about his work at the Madison Public Library, please give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 9. So, Tetra Pac-Man, first, I want to start a little bit with your story and you and your name. What's the origin of it? Because I'm sure behind that name, there's a reflection of your art and your practice and your vision of what you're doing as an artist. So tell us a little bit more about you.
Of course. Thank you. Well, I've been an artist since, 1991. Is when I start to work and decide to use my energy and my time and my mind to making art. But when I arrived here in Madison in 2012, and my first interactions with the community was through the Madison Public Library, and we get a grant to make a piece for the, in that time, project of renewing the Meadow Ridge Library. So we get a grant to make a piece, and we pick a material, the Tetra Pak boxes, to make that material, to make that piece. So over the process, I became the artist in residence. At that time, I was the second artist in residence for the library, and that was a great experience because allow us to understand community and to show how different approach in public space and materials and working could be possible. So in one interview with the Isthmus, they reported write down the Tetra Pac-Man.
Uh-huh.
So I take it.
Yeah.
It's like, was a name given to me. It was amazing because I was the only one. So now I adopted, if you Google Tetra Pac-Man with K, you find my work. And in these times in the internet, having the uniqueness is priceless.
Yeah.
So that's what I like to go when I'm working as an artist with my Tetra Pak
Yeah.
Tetra Pak name.
And Tetra Pak is that material that milk, many milk cartons, for example, are made out of, right?
Yes, yeah. They call it shelf-stable foods.
Okay.
There are foods that, because the properties of the materials, that is so smart, science is so smart, and engineers are so smart that they can make these solutions. And this, in this case, is a mix of paper, aluminum, and plastic. And if you put foods inside that box, it's not necessary to refrigerate the food and can preserve for months, mm-hmm. even years. So, but the problem is that when you mix those three materials together, you cannot separate them. And that's the challenge. So the box say recyclable where facilities exist. Yeah. And you need to Google if your city, your town, where you live, can do it. And actually Madison does.
Oh, it does? And
yes, that's why we did that project at that time, to share with the people that those boxes that are so convenient also can be recyclable. And let's make a parenthesis there, because 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we're still thinking that recycling was a great solution. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's still, we need to keep doing it, but we know that's not the solution. It's one of our challenges still, the quantity of waste that we produce for our way of life, how we live and how the systems around us evolve and distribute themselves. But the problem that they put in us, the final consumers, is too big. So thinking that it's our responsibility, mm-hmm. just to, hey, recycle, and then check if your city have mm-hmm. capacity to handle that things, it's not make sense.
It's too much individual burden, you're saying, and the burden should be where?
In the company that produced the thing. Mm-hmm. It's like they should take it back and take responsibility, because what I want is what is inside the package, not the package.
Mm-hmm. And how did your art back in those days during that first residency incorporate Tetra Pak?
Well, we made this big piece for the Meadow Ridge Library. Mm-hmm. It's still there. It's a permanent piece. Mm-hmm. We have 10 years over there. It's 99 point something, just Tetra Paks.
Okay.
We figured out how to put them together, thinking backwards, how it's made. And then we during the process of that residency, we invite the community to sketch possible designs. Then with friends and members of the library and the public, we select a design. And I just was my challenge to build over that idea. So my process is very freeing ways that I can adapt and take from my surroundings, and that means people, materials, situations, to propose something. It's like, funny is that I made in my life just two or three projects with Tetra Paks. It's like, but I have plenty, any materials that you think is trash or waste, I have a solution in creative ways. But it's just because I can't. Then I figured it out at one point that was better for me and my practice and my conscience to try to find alternatives of secondhand stuff than trying to keep buying new stuff for being doing my egocentric practice. Mm-hmm. Artists are very egocentric. We have a weird need of me, you know? And I try to take away that part. That's also very interesting of the nickname. It's like, it's not me, it's the idea mm-hmm. of my practice.
Mm-hmm. Let's continue talking about that practice a little bit more then, and how it's evolved. You've been doing this residency since last fall at the Bubbler at the Central Library, right? What drew you back to the Madison Public Library as a way to continue that practice you were just describing?
Well, when this open call for the last residency that I applied was there, and they say they will welcome in previous residents because they were celebrating the 10 years, I said, oh, I think this is a moment to come back. I had been not making a lot of art in the last years because parenthood, mm-hmm. and I feel that's super amazing because I grow a relationship with my son that is unique. And now that he's 8 and a half, when this opportunity came, the first person that I asked was he. I say, are you willing to be with me during our time together doing this? And I explain a little more, and he say, oh, yeah. So we worked together this residency. We both were the artists in residency. And that was amazing because it was a challenge, but was also a great opportunity that gave this result. So the people that went to see us there was very surprised to see a little kid around taking pictures, deciding if the music was good or not, and just putting his part there. And for me was a challenge, but also an opportunity to prove that I'm ready to be back. And that's what I'm here.
Mm-hmm. And a new way to collaborate, I imagine, with your son.
Oh, it's amazing. Yes, we have so much fun. And it's here. We just starting a new stage in our lives.
So let's dig into the process of what you were actually doing during this residency, the workshops and the public aspect of it, as well as the end result. Tell us a little bit more about those activities and workshops that are part of this residency at the Bubbler.
Yeah, when they interview me as a finalist, they say, well, what are you planning to do? What do you want? And I say, I don't know. We're going to be doing something. And was a way that I have a lot of ideas, a lot of these projects that I was working, the climate sheets, my new sculptures based in cardboard like piñatas, the temples. And I said, I want to put a little of everything. It's like there were years of having experiments in my head that I want to pop up. Yep. So, but the center was, I always tell them, I want to keep painting the climate sheets because that's one of my central projects right now that is in my head and I cannot move away of this practice of confronting science and my art practice. And they say, okay. So when we start to do the open studios, people came and figured out like, okay, what is this painting, these numbers? So we start to explain where the information came, this data from the Killing Curve, and explain that making those sheets together was a kind of a performance moment, experience together that could open to new dimensions of conversation. Mm-hmm. And it happened. It's like people was curious. People were like not aware of some things. And I always tell them, I'm not a scientist. I like to observe the science and try to put together these things to understand and facilitate a process of reflection that what is our goal and what is our position and what is our point. As we say at the beginning, it's not our fault as individuals, like you need to recycle. Mm-hmm. No, yes. Keep recycling, please. But we need to point to the cause of all this mess.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is what your climate sheets are really doing ultimately, right? Is pointing to the cause. And so let's pause a minute and really try to describe for folks what those climate sheets are. So I was looking at the Madison Public Library website and the Bubbler website, and they have some images there. We could pick any number of numbers, but I'll just give an example. So there's one green banner that there's a picture of on the website of a participant in the project painting, and it says at the top, across the top, 427.01, and then below it, it says February 25th. Explain to us what the number there and the date signify or refer to.
Yes, thank you. The climate sheets have the same format and, as you mentioned, have a value in the top that has not anything else. So the measure for that number is parts per million and will represent the amount of carbon emissions, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere mix. We need to remember and make aware people, and that's the goal of the project, that in the 80s, scientists told us to do not cross 350 parts per million. So we are in the 430s. That's way farther than the limit that was dangerous. Mm-hmm. So that's the main goal of this project. Say, in this month of this year, this was the reading. The Killing Curve started to measure this in the 1958. Mm-hmm. And in the 80s, in 86, we crossed for first time the 350. And in 88, scientists came to Congress to say, this is dangerous. And since then...
You said 1988.
Yes. Yeah. I started working as an artist in 1991. The first time that I hear climate change stuff related was 1989. So since then, my head is like, what is this? But then also since then, all the time doing my personal projects, I've been observing how we are in denial and how the fossil fuel industry is working super hard to distract us and to say, nah, it's okay. You know? Mm-hmm. So we are super manipulated in levels that is hard to understand. But each time that we hear the terms climate change or global warming, it don't make sense. But if we talk about this number and say, just compare with the speed limits and try to make an average how fast you are going and then consider that there's nobody watching you doing that. So the chances for an accident are high. That's where we are.
You're comparing that an individual speeding with the sort of society speeding up the production of CO2 and putting it in an atmosphere to say, you know,
so, yeah,
the chances of an accident here, hey, it's like an alarm bell, are very high.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We will not put our kids in a school bus knowing that it's going to speed this way.
Mm.
And we are doing that in this war, and we are allowing to happen. Let's mention that carbon dioxide is not the only greenhouse. Is the top, but it's followed by others. And the next one is very dangerous. It's methane. And it's very dangerous because we call it natural gas.
Uh-huh.
And natural gas is not green.
And Tetra Pak Man promised me before the show that he had some surprises for me. And as he was talking about the dangers of methane, he pulled out from a sheath of what appears to be duct tape or aluminum foil, I'm not sure which, a sign that says natural gas is not green that he's holding up in front of me. And natural gas is not clean. And we're getting a little performance art here in the studio as well. And natural gas is also not natural. So I have three black and white signs in front of me reminding me that natural gas is not something that, though it's in the earth, not something that is meant to be put up into the atmosphere. And that's where you're coming from with the methane, right? Obviously,
yes.
Methane is a big byproduct of the burning of natural gas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's natural gas is basically methane. So it's fracking gas, is fossil gas, and it's very dangerous because they say it's a clean British energy. That's a misleading lie, because when you burn natural gas, yes, it's cleaner than coal. Okay? But if you release the gas, it have 80 times more power of heat trapping than CO2 in the short term. And the short term is 20 years. Mm-hmm. So we are toast because we have a lot of natural gas production, mm-hmm, and natural sources like a permafrost release. So this is so interesting because we keep being greenwashed that natural gas is your friend.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry. This city have a problem with greenwashing.
Madison, you're saying.
Oh, yeah. With the energy company here, mm-hmm, like to sponsor everybody, including people that I know, for just say, we are doing great. I know. They have the ability, all fossil fuel companies have the ability to switch 100%, but they don't want to lose money. So we need to lose our future. That doesn't make sense to me. And it's a big contradiction. We see it in so many ways, how we are agreeing in one way that we are in danger, but in the other hand, we are allowing the people making this bad keep going. So that, why? It's like...
So these signs are really kind of putting that contradiction right in our face. I want to remind listeners that you are listening to A Public Affair here on WRT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm Douglas Haynes, and I'm talking today with Madison artist Tetra Pak Man about his current exhibits at the Central Library in downtown Madison, his recent residency at the Madison Public Library. If you have a question for Tetra Pak Man or want to share a comment about his work at the Madison Public Library, please give us a call at 608-256-2001, extension 9. I'm sure many people have walked by on Mifflin Street and seen the banners hanging in the big windows of Central Library and wondered, what's that all about? This is your chance to listen in and ask more about what those banners are meant to be confronting us with. And get involved in conversation here with the artist behind them, Tetra Pak Man. So let's return to right where we left off there. And we were talking before the show about confrontation and the role of art in making people uncomfortable. Tell us about your goals a little bit more.
Yeah. Of course. And I like that you use the term confrontation and uncomfortable, because mm-hmm. they are the two things that I try to play around mm-hmm. in a way that is not aggressive. Yeah. I like to use curiosity, like spark the curiosity in the people and prepare them, open themselves to listen. So if you are right in front of a person and show a banner and say, climate change is happening now, do something, yeah. people will say, move away. Yeah, I need to keep going.
Much.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you put numbers and cryptic data in a betting sheet on the windows of a public library, people come inside just to ask, what are those numbers about? And that was wonderful. And I want to say thank you to all the people in the library, and especially the people that facilitate this process, Carly, Trent, Tana, all the staff, the foundation, the friends of the library. I'm super happy that they allowed me to do all this, and to the people, the patrons in the library, to be open to come and talk to staff and say, what are those numbers? And then be ready to start a conversation and say, oh, wow. A lot of people didn't know that. And it's what I'm saying before.
So you're starting conversations.
Exactly. Yep. My goal, as I say, I'm not a scientist, but I can help others to start a conversation and to start to do their own process of learning and opening to the facts. It's like science is based on facts. This is not about if you believe or not. There's proof of the causes, and there's data and analysis and a study that are telling us the consequence if we keep ignoring it. And I don't want to get too deep into this, but we know that the new administration is doing everything to walk backwards. So this is terrifying. But it's upon us to make the big decisions mm-hmm. to stop supporting those companies that are making this going bad. So I wish, one of my biggest dreams as an artist is become very famous and very powerful in markets, you know, and then can say to organizations, small organizations that depends on funding from fossil fuel corporations, say, keep that away, kick yeah. that. I give you the money that they are giving you, but be clean. It's like, we just need to start to switch, but there's not enough people with resources bold enough to say, I'm going to step in with the needs of my community, because what are doing fossil fuel companies is abusing the needs of the community, saying, I will give you $10,000, $5,000 for your summer concert, for whatever mm-hmm. you are organizing, but put my logo there so people think I'm doing good things.
Or just to say, we're providing a vital public resource, right? I've never heard it framed quite that way before, but you're right. It's an abuse of the community's trust.
Of course.
In a sense.
Because they tie my hands. Then if I talk with people and I say, can you please, if you want to work with me, can you please get rid of that sponsor? And they say, and this is true. Say, if we do that, we need to close our doors. So I don't work with those organizations because it's hard for me, you know? So, but everybody's in that situation. So I feel it's very bully. So we need alternative where to find, because the community organization, of course, need support because we know where we live and how situations are. But where are that? So I wish, and this is my biggest dreams, and I know I'm in the path of, because I've been in this path for more than 30 years. It's like, I can do that. My art can do that. Together, we can do that. It's just thinking in different ways how community works and how arts can make magic.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about the magic of the art itself and the magic of this collaborative process you've been engaged in. We were also talking before the show about how it's important with a serious subject like climate that people can tune out from, like you said, because it can be too overwhelming, to not make the way we present it always so serious. Tell me more about that.
I don't know how that happens. I'm just silly. And I involve that in my practice mm-hmm. to be playful. So it's very important to always making jokes around these serious issues. And as you mentioned, minutes ago, I did a little performance here. I'm all the time performing. It's like, so being in public, working in my thing, it's just a show, literally. So, for example, I wear masks or accessories in my head that make people come and just check what's going on.
Yeah.
And that make the icebreaker to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. The most wonderful moments for me were being at the Bubbler and just knowing that people was coming in because they were super curious what was going on. And then being able to laugh a little over the process of explaining the danger that we are. And that's just wonderful. And I don't know how to describe it, but it just happened. Mm-hmm. It's like...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's a great example of the way that art can create conversation. And, you know, a lot of climate thinkers talk about what we need to do more of all the time is just talk about climate all the time, what it provides for us, but also, like you've been talking about, the danger that we're in with what we're doing to the climate. And your work is doing such a wonderful job creating that conversation on multiple levels. What were you wearing, as you said, on your head to draw people in?
They were... kind of a headband with two antlers.
Uh-huh.
But they were so funny because I'm very, my hair is big and I have a long beard. So that thing looks like was part of my hair.
Right.
So people just came and say, what's that? Is that your hair or that's something? And I just say, I don't know. So, for example, that mask that I was using and those antlers are part of the show right now. Mm. I put them as a part of the show because recognizing that I'm performing as a goal of my practice to make you smile, to make you think in a different way, is a conscious action. It looks like so spontaneous, but mm-hmm. this is the result of, I don't know, years of thinking how, and I don't think about it, I just do it. It's like when you know how to cook something, you don't need to read the recipe again. You just make it happen. So that's, for me, my practice.
Yeah.
And it's not conventional.
And I want to talk about the gallery exhibit on the third floor of the library right now, which is called Doing Something,
yes.
Right?
The result of doing something.
The result of doing something. I love that. It reminds me of there's a famous Susan Sontag sentence, the writer Susan Sontag, where she's writing to herself, do something, I've got to do something. You know, it reminded me of that. And this exhibit is a realization of that realization. I've got to do something, right?
Pause there.
Yeah.
Doing. That was very conscious to make active verb, not just passive.
Yeah.
Active. We are doing something. Just being here, we are doing something.
Being in the process.
And here, right now.
And here as well, talking about
it's
it.
Like,
yeah.
It's an active process for me. I'm doing something. No matter, it's not a solution. Totally the final solution, but this is sparking flames.
Yeah.
And I know you are listening.
Yeah. So you're trying to make that come alive in this exhibit as well, or tell us, I guess, more about how the exhibit shows that, what you were just describing.
Well,
it's
important to say that show was not planned since the beginning. At the beginning of the residency, pretty much nothing was planned. Uh-huh. It was evolving, and I have some ideas that I want to pull, and the library was so generous to always open and accept and say yes to all my proposals until we finish with that huge multi-floor installation.
Yeah.
So one day they say, hey, the gallery is empty, you want to put something? And I say, of course I did. And in one weekend we fill it.
Okay.
And it's a mix of all, I mix over there and layer up. It's the third time that I do that layer up, using the climate sheets as a background, then putting prints and drawings of myself over. But in this time also I include the works of the people, the results of the workshops that we did. One of the workshops was about collage and asking people to imagine how their future, how do you envision your future, was the prompt. And they did with abstract collaging response to that prompt. So we include those materials there, and I mix my work with the community work, with their work together. Mm-hmm. And once it's put all there, it's so pretty because you cannot make a difference between a kid's work or my work.
That really struck me when I went in there. I was a little disoriented, not in a bad way, but that it didn't feel like a conventional art exhibit where you are coming to see one artist's coherent representation of their work, right? It was like the whole exhibit was a collage in a sense.
It was
not
an
only
installation.
The work itself, but you're saying it's a collage of voices.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's something that, again, because I have the ability to dominate my technique, I can do that. And I've been learning, and as I say, my last shows, to do that layering, because that make an environment that mm-hmm. is more immersive, and then your thoughts are pulled in different ways. It's like it's provoking curiosity and, mm-hmm. and making the questions bigger. Like,
yeah.
And I don't like to have the as again, and that's part of the beauty of my nickname. It's like the author, the who is Tetra Pakman? It's an idea. So those words, those results, no matter was my hand or participants' mm-hmm. hands, is the idea
yeah.
of that we are doing something together. So it's very interesting. No matter that there are pieces that are older than the residency, I've been doing something for so long that I'm still not know what it is, mm-hmm. but I'm here. And tomorrow we are going to do something very big.
Tell us about what's happening tomorrow.
Okay, tomorrow we're having, and was part of this process, organizers came to visit me and say, okay, you have the climate sheets here, but do you want to put some climate sheets on the streets on Earth Day? And I say, that's a great idea, because the origin of the climate sheets, as we mentioned, is 2019, a climate strike that Greta Thunberg organized worldwide, and the youth here in Madison participate. So mm-hmm. I was part of that, and for that time, we painted the first 10 years of the climate sheet that we did, 120 sheets we painted at that time with the community, to bring them and parade them in this strike.
And just to remind listeners, these are the sheets that portray the carbon dioxide parts per million at the top and the date below.
Exactly.
Right, from the
curve. The same that are in the window, yep. and the same that we paint 22 more over this residency. Mm-hmm. So when they say, hey, let's do something in Earth Day, I say, okay, let's organize a parade and let's walk around them downtown. And let's try to bring them inside the Capitol. And that's what is happening tomorrow in the afternoon. If people can join us, that will be awesome, because we have 100 sheets, 100 of the climate sheets free to come and walk around the Capitol and then be in the rotunda to take a few pictures and videos and provoke more curiosity in the people. What are these numbers? It's like, I think in 2019 was not possible that they came inside the building. Mm-hmm. They were just in the garden, in the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was still very powerful.
Yep.
But I think it would be beautiful to have them with the beauty of the building together and use them to make more awareness. So if tomorrow, guys, you are free at 3 p.m. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be magical. And I'm so excited about it. It's like, I cannot believe it's happening. And I'm so thankful with all the organizations that are supporting us, like 350 Wisconsin.
350.org?
Yes, yep. mm-hmm. the 5051 chapter of Wisconsin, the Gaia Coalition, Beyond Plastics, the Sierra Club, and Indivisible are participating with us tomorrow. So it's just beautiful that these things keep making a ripple effect.
Yeah. So you need hundreds of hands to hold up those 100
like,
banners
just
tomorrow,
like,
right?
Just like 400 people
yeah.
would be great,
yeah.
but I think we can have like 800 so we can make turns.
Yeah.
It's, yes, hundreds of hands. If we have 100 sheets, just make a mat.
yeah.
But it's possible. This yeah. city is so big. This city is so energetic. This community is so bright. I saw it over the library. It's like, this is one of the climate sheets. This actually I painted yesterday. Is the last month.
Oh, beautiful. March. Tetra Pakman just handed me a bundled up climate sheet for, is this the date that's on there? Mm-hmm. March 25th?
Yeah, it was the last
of last month.
It's okay. The last month available, and uh-huh. it's funny because this administration.
Can I open it?
Yes, you can open it. This administration is treating with closing the observatories that are taking these lectures. So it can be that you have in your hands the last data available officially. We don't know if next month
right.
is going to be available
because.
They're closing all these.
They're closing and defunding all the labs that
exactly.
or many of the labs that are measuring such things. And they are actually, I did read that. Yeah, the main place where they measure this is in Hawaii, right?
Yes.
And they're cutting off the funding.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they are treating to cut it. So it's a crucial moment right now to bring this data to the Capitol and say, this is not about politics. This is about survival.
Yeah, I'm holding up this banner now. It's on a, it looks like a children's sheet with tractors and airplanes on it. And it's in big, bold, black numbers, 427.73 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere on March 25th of last month. And again, as a reference point, Tetra Pak Man was telling us back in 1988, scientists told us that 350 parts per million was the borderline for danger, the danger zone of a habitable climate on planet Earth. So it's a vivid representation of exactly how far we have gone since then. I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to A Public Affair here on WORT in Madison. I'm Douglas Haynes, and I'm talking today with Madison artist Tetra Pak Man about his current exhibits at the Central Library in downtown Madison and his recent residency there. If you have a question for Tetra Pak Man, there is still time to give us a holler at 608-256-2001, extension 9. If you've seen those banners in the windows of the Central Library and you want to share a thought about them, please let us know. Continue the conversation. Tetra Pak Man, I loved when you were describing what's going to happen tomorrow on Earth Day, people bringing these climate sheets, these banners up to the Capitol, boldly announcing what is happening to the atmosphere. As they do so, it really embodies what you were describing before as doing something together, especially the emphasis on that word together that you've included there, that is the title of the exhibit over at the library right now as well. Let's talk a little bit more about the together part. Why is doing something together different or more important than doing something alone, particularly in light of making art about the climate?
It's very tricky, your question. It's just, and actually it's very simple. If we keep working individually, we will arrive nowhere. If we start to move together, we can make whatever. It's like, I imagine the system as it is, a pyramid with a top very powerful. Mm-hmm. But we feel that in the bottom we are nothing and we are a lot. It's like, and I like to imagine us as spheres, okay? If we move left, right in uniform and unison and then change a little that movement, the top will fall. We need to learn to come together and dance. This is about dancing. The arts are very important in this process of changing our way of thinking and understanding our collective power. I need to mention that if our listeners are looking forward to come tomorrow, I invite people to dress full black or full green to make again a point that we can be uniform.
Mm.
It's very important that we show our ability to think different. We all have that. We all are creative. We think we cannot make art. Oh, I never make art since I'm in kindergarten or whatever. Well, you can still today grab something and do something. It's like, I have proofs for that. Everybody can make it. So participating in others' process, like in this case, a Tetra Pak Man process, it's a way also of doing something. But if there's not this together part, it's not as strong as could be. So I don't know if I answered something.
No, you absolutely did. You absolutely did. What would you say to the skeptic who would say, that's great, that sounds fun, and maybe it's a joy for the people doing that process, but it's not really going to change policy or change, you know, the amount of carbon in the atmosphere?
You just give yourself the answer. They're having joy. They're having fun. So what? We're trying.
Yeah.
We're still trying. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to stop doing it, no matter that the energy company is more powerful than me right now. But I might become more powerful than the energy company. It's dependent on us. And it's not about me. Mm-hmm. Again, it's we. I like to talk in plural. It's like, I don't know, it's something weird that I understand collective power.
Mm-hmm.
is like as a source. It's like joy is the biggest source. There's this beautiful movie. It's not beautiful. It's a movie. It is pretty. Okay. Monsters, Inc.
Okay.
The center of that is scare kids to make energy. But then at the end, they have make kids have joy and there's more energy. That's so simple. It's there.
Joy makes energy, exactly. In other words. And without the joy...
Joy is a powerful source of energy, more than fear. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid. Together we get this.
Well, I think that's such a powerful message at such a big time of fear right now. So many people are afraid.
Yeah.
I think of something the Nobel Prize winning writer Svetlana Alexievich said, that we are a civilization that runs on fear.
It's by design.
Yeah. And so you see art sort of as a counter to
that
fear.
Of course. And it has been forever.
Yeah.
It's like, this is nothing new. It's like the power of manipulation through arts has been used forever. And I want to say again, manipulation is not a negative term. It's used most of the time in negative ways. But we can help people to look differently through the arts.
Yeah. And we were talking earlier also about the public library, about that being the sort of perfect space for that, and how, and a system of providing people information. That's exactly what you're doing with these banners, right? But you also described yourself as hacking that system in a way. Tell us more about that.
This is very interesting, and thank you for bringing it up again. Yes, the library is a perfect system, and I love the Madison Public Library so much. And I'm very grateful for all the opportunities over the years, because we have been experimenting and proving alternatives that I also feel very proud that they incorporate in their own practice for other artists and other spaces. So hacking the system in this time was like making people come and ask about what are those numbers, and then open themselves to learn the challenges that we're facing. And when we did the Meadowbridge project, we used the system of distribution of books between branches to move our materials that we were collecting. I figured out that these red bins that go from one library to other library when you request a book, they were moving in these trucks all the time. And I asked, what if we put the Tetra Paks that people is collecting in Alicia Ashman Library to bring it here to Central? And they first say, well, wait, what? And they say, well, we're asking people to bring them clean. We're asking, this is our material. It's not trash. It's not a recycle. We are looking differently. Why we cannot do this? So I don't know how, but they accept. So there was a flow from 9 locations or 8 locations to Central Library of the material that we were gathering. So at the end, they were like, what? So we were not abusing the system, because it was not heavy. It was lighter than books, actually, because it was empty soup boxes. There was not a real problem to say no if the flow was going in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So those little interventions on systems is what I call hack the system. Mm-hmm. Making people come to me and ask me, what is my protest about? It's the greatest thing in protest life, because they don't know I'm protesting. My art is a protest. I actually have a piece there that say, esta es una protesta, in the library show. It say, esta es una protesta por indiferencia al cambio climático. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a protest about indifference, about climate change. So it is, I don't know. I just can't make it. I just make it and works. So I love it, because if 200, 300, 100 people get the chance to think differently, my peace is priceless.
Mm-hmm. And that's how things change, right? It changes people's hearts, or it changes people's minds a little bit. And that's how culture gradually changes, especially when we have those hearts and minds changes together.
Yeah. I want to say that my intention is to help. I'm here to help make things happen. It's not because me. I think a lot in my son. I think a lot in his generation. But before my son was here, I was working already for the kids.
And did you have kids, other kids besides your son, involved in the process in the residency?
Oh, of course. In the process of the residency, we all the time have kids. And I need to say that for me, kids is 1 to 99. So all the time we have we have been working with kids. Mm-hmm. And funny thing that we have days where the public was between the 3 years and the 88 years in the same workshop.
Wonderful.
In the same space, working in the same.
And how rare that is that generations mix like that in public spaces these days.
I think I'm not an expert on that, and I'm not here to criticize others, but I feel that in my practice, it's just amazing and beautiful that we can flow in ways that people is not expecting, mm-hmm. and that make them first curious, but at the same time comfortable to feel that they can fit. There's not big expectations. I say something, we paint these numbers, these big numbers, you know? Sometimes there's drops of paint out, or sometimes somebody don't figure out that the center of a letter should not be painted. It happens. So I always start saying, there's no mistake. The process is open. We try to follow some structure, but if something happened, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And that thing, the fact that somebody say, or can listen, is everything okay? Everything is acceptable, but still I'm following a structure. That's so weird, because mm-hmm. there are rules, but there are no rules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And what happens when you see people start to feel that sense of freedom and stop worrying about the mistakes?
I feel joy. I feel them realizing that they have a lot to do. And I don't know, and I always, no matter that they are 3, 5, 8 years old or 70 years old, I know after that experience, they start to look differently at things. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, that's more than hacking a system, mm-hmm. like helping others to open themselves. It's a gift. I take it with all my heart, and I respect those moments a lot.
We only have about 8 minutes left, Tetra Pak Man, and I want to make sure that you get to share whatever else you'd like to share. And I'd also love to hear more about your upcoming work. What's next for you in this ongoing community-based art process?
Very interesting. I have not many plans. I've been so busy working on this that I don't put eyes in something. I'm participating next weekend with a lot of beautiful artists in Print and Resist in the Madison Public Library. So it's next Saturday in the morning. I think it's 11 to 4. Don't quote me on that one. Print and Resist, I'm participating there and having for first time available to people pieces. So that's something weird on me. But it will be fun. And I'm working with the youth department of the library also, participating with the shelter kids and more other works with the students. I like to keep that going. And of course, I want to keep painting these climate sheets. Yep. Right now, it's like I make an observation days ago. There are more than 800 months in total in the curve. I have painted like 130, 140. So something that I want to take it serious is time, find moments to paint all these sheets. It's like if tomorrow we pull 100 of these sheets and you guys come to help us to stretch and hold the space for those sheets, it will be beautiful. But probably in a couple of years, we can have 800 of them and need 1,600 of you guys. But it will be beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's my...
It's beautiful. It's a public document of what's happening to the climate. And also, do you have a sense that if there are more of them, it will have a different effect? Like if you had 800 versus 100, for example?
Just consider the sheets. They're big, 8 by 6 or 8 by 8, depending on the size. So just stretch them and hold the space with that. Just imagine the area that we can cover. It's like, it's just whatever happened tomorrow, multiply by 8.
Makes an impression.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's powerful.
Do you expect to have any interactions with elected officials in this process tomorrow?
Actually, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, we will be super, we are very honored that Francesca Hahn and the mayor are going to talk to us. They're going to give us a welcoming to there. And I don't know, I'm very excited about all this, as I mentioned, all these organizers that put together this event and bringing the climate sheets. You guys are going to put the heart there too. So it's a party. That's what I also like to say. Let's make it a parade. It's like, yes, We might be protesting, but we also here for joy to show together we can do things differently. It's like, it's not just complain, it's propose.
I like that distinction. It's not just about complaining or protesting, it's proposing. So when you see these climate sheets being held up tomorrow by hundreds of people, what do you think you're proposing?
Change.
Yeah.
Hold accountable the origin of this. Mm-hmm. Together we can.
Yeah. And the bigness of the statement kind of advertises that,
the change
that's possible, and the holding them accountable.
And this is just a little percentage of what we can do. Mm-hmm. It's like something that is important. As an artist, practice make the mastery. So this is a practice moment. This is not going to be the last time that we bring to the public space the climate sheets. We're going to keep growing this project, and we are going to probably return next year mm-hmm. with more people, with more sheets. We don't know. Probably we will go to other places, to other cities. I don't know what is going to happen, but this is something. We are doing something.
There's a lot of talk right now about how tomorrow nonprofit organizations and the environmental justice and environmental organizations and communities are expecting the Trump administration to make some announcements that are going to make it harder to do their work. And already we've seen also a lot of new legislation proposed about making protest harder. How do you see art as a way to sort of go around those obstacles that power tries to impose on creating change that you're describing?
Well, before they put those restrictions, we already did the result. It's like, as I say, we hacked the Madison Public mm-hmm. Library system mm-hmm. and building to do a non-grumpy protest.
Yeah.
It's like we are making people curious since 1 month ago about this information. Hundreds of people have been asked about it. So whatever happened tomorrow and whatever happened in the future is not going to stop us. Yeah. It's like art is bigger than anything. And it's not because I'm making, it's mm-hmm. because we are making it.
I think we'll leave it there, Tetra Pakman.
Thank you so much.
I was honored to have you here and have this conversation. That is Madison Public Library Artist in Residence, Tetra Pakman, talking about his recent residency and installations at the Central Library in Madison, which you can still see this week up for display at the Central Library. Thank you again for
joining
me.
Thank you so much, guys.
And thank you, listeners. If you've appreciated the show today, please share it on the Wart Online Archive or wherever you find your podcasts. I'm your host, Douglas Haynes, and I'd like to thank today's engineer, Andrew Thomas, producer Sarah Gabler, news director Shali Pittman, and receptionist Amy Lutsky. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today on A Public Affair here at WRT 89.9 FM Madison. Stay tuned for Madison Bookbeat. Unknown positions, live and direct, become and never be recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, become and never be recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot. And you are, of course, listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison, listener sponsored community radio, broadcasting all over the world from Madison, Wisconsin. You just heard A Public Affair with Douglas Haynes. Coming up next is Madison Bookbeat. We actually have a new host today, which I'm looking forward to hearing. Bill Hischler, he is speaking with four different guests in today's studio about book clubs in the Madison area, so it should be good. Before that, we will have BBC headlines and a few station announcements. Keep it here on 89.9 FM.
ignorant, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with an admission that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
Une fois qu'il t'a senti le nom, tu t'allonges sous ton dos.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Eileen McHugh with the BBC News. The first public prayers for Pope Francis, who died early on Monday morning, are being said in St. Peter's Square in Rome this evening. Large groups gathered for the rosary, which was recited by a senior Vatican cardinal. Inside the Vatican, the body of the Pope is being placed in a coffin. Pope Francis, who was 88, was the first Latin American Pope. Lebu De Secco has more.
I think that he will be remembered for two things primarily. One is what he set out, you know, on the first day of his papacy, as he said, he wanted his church to be